This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
Christopher Ndong, Secretary General of the Cameroon Renaissance Movement, said Friday that arrested opposition leaders are on an indefinite hunger strike.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka on Cameroon opposition reaction to the arrest of their leader. Details coming up also. Political violence is on the rise in Malawi as the country prepares for elections. And Kenya is taking steps to tackle high-level corruptions that has tainted the image of East Africa's largest economy. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Cameroon's arrested opposition leader Maurice Kamto and his supporters have started a hunger strike a day after they were told they will face 8 charges amounting to treason. Lawyers say if found guilty, they could face the death penalty, as Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Christopher Ndong, Secretary General of the Cameroon Renaissance Movement, said Friday that arrested opposition leaders are on an indefinite hunger strike. He said the party's chair, Maurice Kamto, and 29 of his supporters arrested with him this past week would take part. Ndong said the strikers aim to show that President Paul Biya's re-election to a 7th term in October was, in his words, a stolen victory.
Kamto wants that this government should give way because they are not legitimate. After the 7th of October 2018 polls, he won the elections. And he wants that they should honestly hand down power without shame, because he is saying if they think that what he declared as a winner is false, let us go back and do a recount.
The opposition calls for a recount of the October votes are likely to fall on deaf ears. President Biya is Africa's second longest ruling leader in power for 36 years, and his government has shown little tolerance for opposition. Police arrested Kamto and 9 party officials on Monday after days of peaceful protest in Yaoundé and 3 other cities ended in clashes. Government spokesman René Emmanuel Sadi said police shot and wounded 7 protesters and arrested 117. Opposition supporters put the number of arrests at more than 200. Kamto and his colleagues are now facing 8 charges, including treason, inciting violence, and disruption of public peace. Cameroon Bar Council lawyer Mojem Fombat says if found guilty, the men could be facing the death penalty.
Article 102 of the Penal Code sanctions hostility against the fatherland. Any citizen taking part in hostility against the Republic shall be guilty of treason and punished with death.
Opposition supporters also stormed Cameroon's embassies in Paris and Berlin on Saturday. Minor damage and stolen documents were reported at the Paris embassy, which was temporarily closed. In Yaoundé, authorities summoned the French ambassador to demand that protesters who stormed the embassy be extradited to face charges. Rights group Amnesty International has called on Cameroon to release all peaceful protesters, including Kamto. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Political violence is on the rise in Malawi As the country prepares for May elections, the victims are mostly opposition party members, beaten by suspected supporters of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, DPP. DPP officials have denied being behind the attacks, blaming misguided youth who aim to tarnish the party's image. Malawi's Electoral Commission has threatened to disqualify any candidate using violence. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Henderson Waya is a member of Malawi's opposition party, the United Transformation Movement. He was driving to a party rally on January 20 when a group of youth attacked.
When they approached us, the one who threatened to burn our car threw a glass bottle at us, which missed me by a whisker but hit the driver's door. I was severely injured by the pieces of glass, which struck in my face.
Waya says the mob declared only the ruling Democratic Progressive Party could hold rallies ahead of May elections. The attack came just days after suspected DPP youth beat UTM lawmaker Boni Kalindo.
I have a blocked nose. I had a clot in the head. This time, I'm still having some body pains, especially the head. Yes, because I was bleeding, as I indicated, bleeding from the nose and the mouth.
The ruling DPP denies they are behind the recent attacks, and President Peter Mutharika said political violence will not be tolerated. Spokesman Nicholas Dawusi went further. He told VOA the violent mobs were posing as DPP supporters to smear the party's image. Malawi's political analyst Sherif Kaisi says violence is often a last resort for leaders who run out of ideas to win public support.
If you run short of them, you don't have what you can give to the people, you don't have what you can explain to the people about what are you going to do for us. To be free from corruption. If you don't have strategies of eradicating corruption, then you result into violence.
The United Nations says if not addressed, Malawi's rising political violence could discourage voting. Malawi's Electoral Commission announced that all the presidential candidates must sign a code of conduct during campaigns.
It focuses on issue-based campaign. Where people express their ideas and not focusing on castigations or failing youth, failing them to stop other people's rally or any form of violence.
The commission says it will disqualify any candidate whose supporters use violence during Malawi's official campaign period, expected to begin in March. Even if enforced, that's little comfort to opposition members like Waya. It also means that Malawi could see weeks of more political violence before candidates need worry about consequences. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Kenya is taking steps to tackle high-level corruption that has tainted the image of East Africa's largest economy. Representatives from private sector and faith-based organizations told reporters they welcome last week's commitment by Kenyan authorities to work towards addressing the scourge. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The representatives of the Multi-Sectoral Initiative Against Corruption said Kenya has taken the war against corruption to a new level. Their statement follows a two-day national conference last week where President Uhuru Kenyatta reaffirmed his commitment to stamp out corruption. Lee Karuri is a co-chair of the Multi-Sectoral Initiative Against Corruption.
The fight against corruption has to be fought by every Kenyan. It has to be fought by government. It has to be fought by the multi-sectoral society in Kenya. And through a collaborated approach, we are going to win. Remember that the enemy is corruption, is the common enemy. And therefore, we must have a unified effort. We must have a unified approach. We must have the meeting of minds so that we can be able to move in a coordinated way.
Last week's conference, attended by political leaders, senior government officials, business executives, as well as representatives from various diplomatic missions, was the first of its kind in recent times. It called for renewed momentum on the war against corruption from key players in the public and the private sectors. Kenya has been riddled with multiple corruption allegations reaching to the top of various government agencies and involving the loss of hundreds of millions of dollars from public coffers. Hairen Wanyoike is the chairperson of the Association of Professional Societies.
We are no longer saying this is the work of government. We are saying this is our fight as Kenyans. Together as Kenyans, if we join hands, we will fight this dragon. One of the things that we have agreed is we have contributed to corruption in this country. Because unless each one of us admits that you have contributed, you can't go anywhere. The first thing is to agree, and every sector has agreed we have contributed to corruption in this country.
According to the latest annual report from Transparency International, Kenya ranks 144th out of 180 countries, an indication that the country's efforts to tackle corruption have borne little results. But Wanyoike says this is bound to change.
We have identified where corruption creeps in professional bodies, and who else is best suited to fight, actually make sure that corruption is not happening. It is us ourselves. Not enough, but it is a start. We will fight this corruption together. Together we stand, or together we fall.
Critics say Kenya, East Africa's richest economy per capita, loses a significant percentage of its annual gross domestic product, or GDP, to corruption, and that it is hard to do business without paying bribes. However, President Kenyatta says his administration has embarked on an anti-corruption drive. Addressing top security chiefs recently, Kenyatta warned that any government official or civil servant found to be engaging in corruption practices will be arrested and arraigned in court.
In this regard, I hereby direct that all regional commissioners, county commissioners, police commanders from today to treat gatekeeping, rent-seeking, fraud and misuse of resources as a threat to the unity, well-being and security of our nation.
The country's chief prosecutor Nuruddin Haji says senior government officials faced with corruption cases must vacate office.
Those people that we have charged to step aside, they must step aside. And it's a right that we have to ask. We are not pleading. We charge you, you must step aside.
Haji, appointed by Kenyatta last year, has filed graft cases against several state officials and business people. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here's a recap of our top stories. Cameroon's arrested opposition leader, Maurice Kamto, and his supporters have started a hunger strike a day after they were told they will face 8 charges amounting to treason. Political violence is on the rise in Malawi as the country prepares for elections. And Kenya is taking steps to tackle high-level corruption that has tainted the image of East Africa's largest economy. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The militant group Al-Shabaab has increased attacks against pro-Islamic State fighters in northeastern Somalia. Intelligence and security officials say Al-Shabaab has seized 2 areas from militants who support the Islamic State group. As a result, the pro-Islamic State militants have retreated further into the mountainous areas. Experts say fighting is likely to continue. Abdi Hassan Hussein is the former intelligence chief of Puntland. He has been watching the clashes and says the fight is for control of the mountains, which have been a base for Islamic State fighters. The two militant groups also have been competing for money extorted from Somali businesses. Al-Shabaab has illegally collected money from businesses for some time. Now, pro-Islamic State groups are starting to do the same in Puntland and Mogadishu, killing at least six businessmen who resisted them. Now, Al-Shabaab considers the pro-Islamic State groups as threats. Rwandans are celebrating Heroes Day, an annual event to pay tribute to people who exemplified and defended the highest values of patriotism and sacrifice for the well-being of the country and its citizens. Some are being honored for standing against the kind of tribalism that launched the genocide of 1994. But while the actions are used as examples for all to follow, some dissident politicians still see many things which need such sacrifices for Rwanda to be democratic. Eugene Uimana has more details from Kigali.
Every year, Rwandans honor their brave men and women and others who are living heroes. Fanuri Sindayiheba and Prisca Uwamahoro are a married couple who survived the March 18, 1997 attack at the Nyange school. Attackers, commonly known as Bachengezi, entered the college, demanding that Hutu students identify the Tutsi amongst them so they could be killed. But the brave youngsters boldly told the attackers that they were all Rwandans and none of them deserved to die. This prompted the killers to shoot indiscriminately at defenseless students. Six died and 40 were severely injured. Fanuel describes the attack. I was studying in senior six. In our class, only three killers embarked. They were asking one clear question: Hutus on the left side, Tutsis on the right. But we defended our unity, that a value has to govern even youth of this time, that Rwandans are Rwandans. Rwanda's heroes being celebrated today are in three categories: Imanzi, Imena, and Ingenzi. The Imanzi category, the highest order, features people whose achievements came at the expense of everything, including their lives. The Imena category comprises of people whose track record includes extraordinary acts for the country and were characterized by utmost sacrifice. The Ingenzi category is comprised of living heroes. The country started to celebrate heroes after 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. The main message is to maintain patriotic values and reflect bravery. Some dissident politicians still see injustice that needs to be tackled by opening the political space. This is Ingabire Victoire, the president of FDU Inkingi Party.
If I see the problem we have, that we have no political space, I would like that the government today accept the dialogue that the opposition are asking today, that we can together find the solution of the many problems we have in our country.
For Diane Gwigala, the dissident politician who tried to run for presidency in 2017 against incumbent Paul Kagame, it takes a brave compatriot even to stand politically against the ruling system.
Doing politics in Rwanda, of course, it's always risky, but it's something that needs to be done because we need change in this country.
Celebrations are being held in villages across the country, and discussions will focus on the theme sustaining heroism in a vision we have chosen. Youth are being mobilized to translate this theory into practice in their daily lives. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Three major international arrests have underscored the continued demand for ivory and pangolin scales despite the ban on trade of the endangered species. Hong Kong Customs say today it has intercepted a record 8 tons of pangolin scales, representing about 13,000 of the scaly anteaters and more than 1,000 ivory tusks. The shippers used ice bags and frozen meat to try to hide the items. The shipment originated in Nigeria and was bound for Vietnam. Officials estimated it was worth nearly $8 million. Meanwhile, the Vietnam news agency reported that customs officials in Haiphong found another 1.4 tons of pangolin scales in a shipping container sent from Nigeria. Conservation group Wild Aid estimates 100,000 pangolins are poached from the wild each year, with all 8 species of pangolin in Africa and especially Asia now under threat. Yesterday, Uganda announced it had intercepted millions of dollars worth of ivory and pangolin scales at a border post with South Sudan. The United States has placed visa restriction on people from Ghana. The move, announced yesterday, will make it more difficult for citizens of the West African country to visit the United States. The administration of President Donald Trump says Ghana is not accepting its expelled nationals. Secretary of Homeland Security Christian Nelson said Ghana has failed to live up to its obligations under international law to accept the return of its nationals ordered removed from the United States. The U.S. regularly restricts visas for countries that fail to repatriate citizens ordered removed from American territory. Ghana is not one of Africa's most populous countries, but only Nigeria has more of its citizens facing orders to leave the U.S. 243 Ghanaians were removed in 2018 compared to 369 Nigerians. However, the number of repatriations to the African nations is small compared to some other countries. Mexico, for example, had over 141,000 of its citizens removed or denied entry last year. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned to the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty of VOA Africa. I will be in Nigeria starting February 6th to cover the general election. Listen to my daily report when you tune in to our news shows, Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.
On Press Conference USA, host Rebecca Ward and VOA's Philip Alexiou speak with William R. Kerr, a professor at Harvard University's School of Business, about the H-1B visa program. Professor Kerr is the author of a book on the subject. He believes the United States needs to attract skilled science and technology professionals to continue its leading role in high-tech industries. Listen Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.